Footy Roundup here. I'm Rob Sergenik, joined as always by Matt Tidcomb for our third installment of our show. Matt, how are things going?
Yeah, pretty good, Rob. How are you?
Great. Quick recap of what we went through last week. In Group C, we both agreed on who was going through. I had Colombia first, Matt had Colombia second, and Ivory Coast first for him and Ivory Coast second for myself. In Group D, we both had Uruguay as group winners. I had Italy going through, Matt with his potential bias pick of England going through.
Hey now.
Still feeling good about that one?
Absolutely. Confident.
Attaboy. Keeping it going, eh? So today we're getting right into Groups E and F. So we'll start off with Group E. The big question in Group E, which consists of France, Ecuador, Switzerland, and Honduras. Matt, what are we going to see from France? What France team is going to show up? I mean, the last four tournaments, they've been to the finals twice, champions in 98, out of the group stage on two separate occasions. They seem very Jekyll and Hyde. What are your expectations?
My expectations is that they're actually going to have a pretty good tournament. Their team is very good. Like you said, though, last World Cup, they had the whole meltdown situation. You know, they had players walking out on the team, on the manager, and it was just an absolute catastrophe as they went out in the group stage. But I don't see this time around. Didier Deschamps, their manager, is doing a very good job. He's picked a good squad as well. So, you know, my expectations are they're definitely going through out of this group.
I agree with you as well. They always kind of make me a little bit nervous, especially after what we saw last tournament. You don't know what to expect within their team morale and within their locker room. Are they united? Are they a collection of very talented individuals? How do they fit the pieces together? You have to imagine that the group sets up relatively favorably for them, which is a big advantage.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, Switzerland are a pretty good squad. As are Ecuador, and they will have the South American advantage. Honduras, you know, maybe not so much. So, you know, France, they got a pretty beneficial draw out of this. I mean, I imagine they're going to go through in first place as well. They might not win all three games, but I imagine they'll, you know, win a couple and probably maybe tie one, maybe with Ecuador or Switzerland. But, you know, this team is good. It's built up from a lot of players who play at top-level clubs. You know, you start at the back with Hugo Lloris in goal, the Tottenham goalie who came from Lyon a couple of seasons ago. He's basically had that position for a couple of years now. And, you know, defensively, you know, Patrice Evra is still there. He was part of the kerfuffle back in 2010. So, you know, it's interesting that he's still playing internationally. But, you know, he's doing well, although he seems to be losing his spot at United back in the Premier League. But, you know, Laurent Koscielny of Arsenal and Mathieu Debuchy of Newcastle. So, you know, and Rafael Varane of Real Madrid. So they're defensively pretty good too, and we all know how good they are going forward as well.
Yeah, they have some exciting midfield prospects, actually. Who catches your eye the most?
Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Man United somehow let that guy slip away from them a couple of seasons ago. He went to Juve and has become a really dominant player. I mean, the last year or so, we've seen him linked with basically every big club in the world. And, I mean, he's playing at one of the biggest clubs in the world, in Juventus anyway, so... But he's come on leaps and bounds since he's moved to Juve. You know, big part of them winning the league title in back-to-back seasons now. Johan Cabaye is another guy who's caught my eye.
He's the one that I was thinking of, yeah.
You know, he played at Newcastle for a while, and everyone kind of knew how good he was. And there was no secret he kind of wanted to head back home to France, and he went and joined PSG. And, you know, he's had a good year. You know, he's a league champion this year too. So, you know, midfield-wise, they're pretty good. You know, Mathieu Valbuena of Marseille is another good player. But, you know, Their star power, if you will, is definitely their strikers up front.
What's interesting to me is Ribery's listed. We have the actual official team sheet here. He's listed as a forward.
Which is very strange.
Do you think that was an oversight or maybe some kind of suggestion that they might go 4-2-3-1 or 4-5-1 playing wide wingers up high? I can't imagine he's going to be playing in a centrally forward role.
No, not at all. I imagine. I'm not sure. It might be just to make it look nicer, really. I mean, it's... There's no sense behind it, to be honest.
Unless they go maybe 4-3-3 and they have him and Giroud on the sides and Benzema up top.
Maybe, but Giroud isn't exactly a guy who's quick of pace,
no,
right? I mean,
he's
more of a talisman.
More of a target man as well.
You know, kind of like, but if anything, I'd maybe Benzema would be on the wide, but even him, I imagine, would be up front. You know, it doesn't... The only other option here is that if they are classifying as Ribery as a forward, is that they play Antoine Griezmann on one side, Ribery on the other, and have either Benzema or Giroud in the middle.
And one on the bench to come on, maybe.
It doesn't really make sense to me that he's listed as an attacker, because I've never considered him that. He's more of an attacking midfielder, but he's midfielder.
Yeah, like an out-winger type.
At the bare bones. So, you know, and Loic Remy is also their other striker, and I'm not honestly sure where he fits in too much. You know, he's played all right for Newcastle this year, but I don't see him getting playing time ahead of, you know, Benzema and Giroud.
Save for injuries or cards, he is a solid player, but I can't see him cracking in
front
of the
competition. He's a squad player. He's nothing else. But the one that gets me is Antoine Griezmann's played really well for Real Sociedad this year. You know, Sociedad were in the Champions League this season after a great La Liga year last year. Not quite so good this year. But he's only played one game for France. So I'd be curious to see how much playing time he gets at the World Cup.
So I'm in agreement with you, Matt. I also think that this is a tournament where the good side of the coin, the two-sided head of coin, shows up for France. I think they'll do well, at least in the sense that I'm confident they'll make it out of the group, most likely as group winners. I do agree that I would not be surprised to see them drop even a point or two, even but, like a couple draws, but I can't see them losing games.
No, really, I don't either. And actually, one interesting quote from Didier Deschamps earlier this
year. Their head coach, yeah.
Yeah, a little while ago. He said, there are six or seven teams out there that head into the competition to win it, but France are not among those teams. That's very interesting quote from the manager for France, who are, you know, at the end of the day, one of the bigger world powers in soccer. So,
how much does that is media posturing, though, I would ask, and how much does he and his team believe that behind closed doors? I can't imagine France is going in this thinking, oh, we'll just fill in the numbers and have a good time.
I think almost more than anything, it's a ploy to get the media off their back for a bit, because there's so much scrutiny surrounding this team still. What happened in 2010?
Take the attention and pressure off.
Exactly, and maybe, you know, Deschamps, he's, through his career, he was always part of criticism at times, so I'm pretty sure he's pretty okay if the media want to rat on him for a little bit, if it gets the attention away from his players.
So, rounding out the rest of the group, I think the big debate, I mean, is it safe to say that I don't think Honduras has much of a chance in this group?
No, I don't, you know, I don't really see it. They have a couple of, you know, decent good players. Actually, Griezmann's partner at Real Sociedad is Ronnie Martinez, and he has 34 goals in 58 league games. So he's, you know, he's a pretty good talisman for the Honduras side. I don't, they had a very good qualifying campaign, but I don't see them making much of the World Cup this year.
Yeah, for me, I think the best case they could do is maybe you draw one of Switzerland or Ecuador if you're really on your game and they're not up to top form. Maybe outside shot, they steal a win from Ecuador. I can't see any situation where they get more than 3 points.
Yeah, they might. I think they might nab a draw. Yeah. But even if it is, I don't see it being like a 2-2, maybe like a 0-0. They have some guys who've played in England quite a bit, though. Especially, for some reason, they have quite a few Wigan guys. I'm not sure what the reason behind that is. Juan Carlos Garcia is still there, as is Roger Espinosa. And Wilson Palacios is now at Stoke, but he used to play at Wigan. And he spent the last 6 years in the Premier League. So they have some experience playing in some of the big leagues. They have some MLS guys. Marvin Chavez plays at Colorado Rapids, for example. So, and Victor Bernardes plays at San Jose Earthquake. So they have some players who have some good experience domestically, but I don't see them making much of an impact in this group.
Realistically, from Honduras' perspective, I can't see them not being, I don't want to use the word satisfied, but proud of the achievement. They've now qualified for back-to-back tournaments. That's pretty big for a smaller country without like a huge soccer pedigree.
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, they're probably now thinking, all right, we made it last time. Now this time we need to you know, come out with something from it. So, you know, they're not a powerhouse by any stretch of imagination. And, you know, they got an easier group than some of the others, you know, minor teams in the tournament. But I still don't see a way to get out of this group, though.
No, same with me. So it brings us to Ecuador and Switzerland. I know we've kind of had the banter back and forth on this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You did start off on the Ecuador side.
I did.
On Switzerland. You may be swaying now. Are you? And what is causing you to sway?
I am swaying to Team Switzerland to get out of this group with France.
Matt's going with Team Rob.
Yeah, I am. On this occasion, I am. I just, you know, now the World Cup squads have come out. You know, you're looking at what Switzerland really has, and they have some very good players. You know, they're not, you know, Switzerland is always that country who stayed really quiet and, you know, it's kind of been doing their own little thing. But, you know, international football wise, they're doing big things. You know, they have some great players. They have a bunch three players from Napoli, who are just, you know, phenomenal players. We got Valon Barami, a Gökhan Inler, who is, from my opinion, one of the best players in Serie A football. He's just a phenomenal midfielder. And Blumen Jamili is the other guy as well. So, and he has 16 goals in 85 games for Napoli after joining from Parma a couple of years ago. So that will help them as well, like the Napoli team spirit for them. But also their other good big player is Jurgen Shaqiri of Bayern Munich.
Fantastic player.
Who is a great, great young player. Their midfield is really quite phenomenal, Rob.
Yeah, I think it's, as a team, they tend to be overlooked a lot, but this, on paper at least, seems to be, to me, one of the stronger Swiss rosters I've seen.
It is. I agree.
We're not even mentioning guys like Senderos, who's back. He provides some good leadership at
Stefan
the back.
Stefan Lichtsteiner, you know, the Juve fly half, is a great, great player. Reto Ziegler, who used to play at Juve, is now at Sassuolo in Italy. Johan Giroud is at Hamburg. So they have some good defense. Their forwards do concern me a touch. I'm not sure where that goal scoring is coming from up front. Haris Seferovic of Real Sociedad is on the team. Josip Drimic of Nuremberg is another guy. So that's my concern.
Oh, Josip Drimic, yeah.
Yeah, my concern is that, you know, they're going to get some good play from midfield, but I'm concerned where the goals might come from. But I think they're going to have enough to get out of the group.
I'm a little bit concerned, but I'm also a little bit, I guess, excited. I watched Josip Drimic play, actually, on a couple of occasions personally. He is of Croatian descent. He was eligible to play for both teams, and ultimately, I think the Swiss were a little bit more proactive in nabbing him. He's a very, very skilled forward that not many people know about. He's only been capped on 5 occasions for the right. Swiss, but he scored twice, and I saw both goals, and they were both gorgeous goals. He's only 21 years old. I think he can make an impact. I do think his youth is a little bit concerning. I imagine Haris Seferovic will probably pair up and start with him would be my guess. A lot of people aren't thinking they're going to opt with Drimic right off the bat. I think they will. He's been in really good form, and like you said, none of the other players jump off the list. So I'm cautiously optimistic that I think their forwards can hold up, and the rest of their roster is pretty strong too.
It's I think what will be the determining factor is how forward those midfielders get. Like Shaqiri loves to get forward for Bayern, and
just open up more space for the forwards.
Well, exactly. And Gökhan Inler, like I mentioned, is a great player, but he too enjoys getting forward and scoring some goals. So I think they're going to have to rely on some secondary scoring to get out. But
yep.
You know, I don't see a problem really here. They're a better team, I think, overall than Ecuador. So,
well, looking at the Swiss, they got to the round of 16 in 2006, out in the group stage in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Their results seem to alternate, like good one year, bad the next. So I'm assuming this is an up year now.
Yeah, judging by the numbers, it should be. And, you know, I think, you know, for a team like Switzerland, you know, I think a quarterfinal berth is probably what their realistic goals are. I'm not sure if they quite make it that. I think they'd be around the 16 team.
Yeah.
You know, quarterfinals maybe as far as they can get, but, you know, they're a good, solid team.
Once you make that next round, it just opens up, though. Anything can happen. I mean, look at what we saw with Greece in 2004, a penalty shot here, you know, a late header there if the game's close.
You know, like South Korea when they went to the semis back in 2002. So
granted, I mean, it took Totti and Vieri missing sitters from, like, a couple of feet from the goal, but those things do happen sometimes, so you never know.
Well, that's what makes, like, once you get out of the group stage is fantastic, but once you really get out of it, I mean, there's always a couple of shocks along the way.
I think nerves and composure end up playing a big
role. Well, you're playing in the biggest tournament in the world, right? So
switching over quickly to Ecuador, what, I guess, Matt, what had you on Team Ecuador's side in the beginning that caused you to sway now?
I think what it really was, you know, they're a South American team, so you just kind of assume they're going to do well. And I'm not doubting that they're not a bad team. I think they are a good team. They've caused trouble over the years in international friendlies and then, you know, qualifying. It's just I'm not sure the depth they have. A lot of their guys are, like, home-based. They're domestic players. They all play in South America. Not many of them play in Europe. Their biggest player is Antonio Valencia, which kind of in a way tells you all you need to know. He's a decent player, nothing spectacular. Plays at Man United now. He's been there, honestly, it seems like forever. You almost forget he used to play at Wigan for a number of years. So, but, you know, he's had 8 goals in 69 games for his country. So he has a pedigree to score every now and then. But I just don't see any logical way that they have the depth and the talent to quite outlast Switzerland. And, I mean, they don't have a chance with France, I don't think.
Yeah. I do think Ecuador has a chance. I'd maybe put it at 65-35 in favoring of the Swiss to advance. I don't think Ecuador is dead in the water by any stretch.
No.
I do think, as we mentioned before, that the familiarity with where they're playing and the conditions they're playing in could help. Do you think, from your perspective of predictions, it was just kind of overvaluing that influence?
Yeah, perhaps. And, like, you know, you never really know what you're going to get until the 23-man rosters are released
for sure.
The World Cup, or, you know, the provisional 30, as some countries are at right now. So it's just once that roster came out, I looked and I was like, I'm just not. My gut feeling kind of just was like, nah, I'm not so sure anymore. It's going to have to be Switzerland. There's just too much depth on that Swiss side. And I think just in every area of the field, they are better than Ecuador.
So France as winners, Swiss 2, Ecuador 3, Honduras 4. We agree on that one?
Bang on the spot.
Perfect. Off to Group F, which contains always perennial threat, Argentina, first-timers, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Iran, and Nigeria. Your initial thoughts looking at that team list?
Well, overall for the group, you know,
I think Argentina got it pretty well.
Argentina got a great group. Out of all the groups in this tournament, I'd say Argentina got the best draw of everyone.
Of the big teams,
you mean? Of the big teams, yeah. Obviously, Iran probably don't think that right now.
Or depending on if you view Belgium as a big team, I guess. It's kind of
true
for them too.
For me, I mean, I don't think there's any question. I think you can ask almost everyone, and they're going to tell you Argentina is going to win this group.
Yeah. It would take, like, to me, Messi's being out for the tournament. Yeah. Aguero and Higuain both get the flu or something.
It would. I don't think. I mean, it's.
Even still, that might not be enough.
Exactly. So, I mean, this Argentina team is really good. It's kind of changed from, you know, how we used to know Argentinian teams. Years ago, you know, a decade ago, Argentina were defensive, midfield, pounding teams that just grinded you away. And they had, the pace up front to finish. Now it's completely different. All their star power is literally up front.
Yeah, it feels like literally. It's totally flip-flop.
It's complete opposite. I mean, they still got Sergio Romero in goal, who plays at Monaco, who's, you know, become one of the better goalies right now in the world. But their defenders are good. I don't think they're necessarily world class, though.
No, I mean, even looking at the name list, I would imagine, I think we could expect the Man City duo to play a role.
Yeah, Demichelis and Pablo Zabaleta, for sure.
And then after that, it seems pretty wide open. Maybe Campagnaro?
Yeah, he's one at Inter Milan. Ezequiel Garay of Benfica is another. It's another good defender who's, you know, Benfica had so much success domestically in the last couple of seasons, and he's been a big part of that. It's their midfield that actually has me bothered. I look at it now, I mean, on our list, Messi is technically a forward. There's obviously always debate about really what is he.
Yep.
Kind of similar to like Frank Ribery we mentioned earlier. But it's just the depth, I don't think, is there. You still got Javier Mascherano, who's been around forever, it seems. And he'll be that defensive midfielder who just holds it in the middle of the park.
Di Maria goes wide.
Angel Di Maria is just a great, great player. But after that, you know, we have Maxi Rodriguez of News Old Boys, and Ever Banega is also at News Old Boys.
Fernando Gago's still around.
He is, well, and he's playing at Boca Juniors. So, you know, their midfield is good. I don't think it's great. You know, if you take out Angel Di Maria, I think it'd be very mediocre at best.
Unless they somehow decide to move Messi more into a number 10 role to get him
right,
more involved.
Behind the attackers.
I think I would like to do, because if you look at their forwards are strong, like we mentioned, Gonzalo Higuain, Sergio Aguero, you imagine at least one of those two, if not both, will be starting.
Yeah.
I would like to see Messi behind them where he can link up a little bit easier. I feel like with Argentina, he's been isolated a bit too much at times, too high up the park. And when you consider what he does at club level and the great service he receives there, he just does not have that same level of quality and creativity around him in the attacking third.
It's also strange how, like, Messi has 37 goals in 83 international games, but I feel like he always struggles at international. Like, it's like Robin Van
Not
Persie.
Unlike, yes, that's what I was going to say, Van because Persie the tournament comes and you're like, where are the goals? But he still produces when you look at the numbers.
It's really strange. Like, I don't know what it is with Van Persie and Messi, but World Cups, it just doesn't seem to click for those guys, and they're two of the best players in the world, so...
I'm thinking if it is going to click for Messi, it's got to be now in
South
America.
Because they're just running out of time, because... It just seems like forever there's been so much pressure on Argentina to win the World Cup. And, you know, 2010, they're one of the favorites. No dice on that throw. So, yeah. You know, but like I said, they're forwards. You have Messi. By the way, he has 354 goals in 423 games for Barca. And he just signed a new deal. I mean, the guy is, electric. I mean, there's no way around it. But, you know, Sergio Aguero of Man City. Higuain, we've mentioned. Ezequiel Lavezzi of PSG is also on this team up front, as is Rodrigo Palacio of Inter Milan. Franco Di Santo is also on the team from Werder Bremen. So up front, this team is just stockpiled to score goals. And this team's going to go deep. They're going to be, I imagine they're going to be at least a semi-final team.
I think so too. The draw, not only within the division,
well,
it sets up favorably for them. I'm really going to be keeping a close eye on Messi, not just his performance, but his body language. If he's struggling early, could be a telltale sign of issues within that team. I hope not. I think he's a fantastic player. It'd be really great to see him show his best at the best time. So I'm going to have a lot of my attention diverted to that, I think.
Be curious to see how much time some of these forwards get. Like, you know, like Rodrigo Palacio is a very good player inner, but how do you warrant him getting playing time over Aguero, Higuain, Lavezzi, for example? I mean, they're just so deep up front.
Agreed. So we're both expect Argentina to run away with this group, more or less. I'd be actually surprised if they don't get max points.
Yeah,
to be
I would
honest.
Be too, I think.
So the rest of the group, what about Iran? Poor little Iran.
Yeah.
What are they going to be able to do in this tournament? Am I going to get another one-word answer out of you?
You are. No is the answer. They're not going to do very much. You know, they're a minor, such a minor team. And that, you know, Nigeria and Bosnia aren't, you know, top 15 countries, top 10 countries, but they're still very, very good teams.
They have some strong players, yeah.
And Iran just doesn't. I just can't see a way Iran have
maybe
any
maybe a lucky draw against
chance.
Bosnia and Nigeria if they give up.
I'm not even convinced on that. I hate to do it. I feel like I've done that once or twice with the other teams, but
You've against just dismissed these major, some listeners, I'm sure.
You know, against these major countries, I don't see it. You know, I guess having said that, you know, New Zealand got three draws in the 2010 World Cup, so there's always a chance. But, you know, I don't see it out of this.
From sheer progression's sake, I don't see that.
No, not at all. I don't.
That I think we can comfortably say.
They
zero.
Might nick a goal, but I my expectations for Iran are basically nothing. The question really at the end of the day, Rob, for this group is, as it always seems to be in every group, there's that one guarantee and there's that debate for who's coming through second. And for this one, it's Nigeria and Bosnia.
It really could go either way. I feel like Nigeria is one of those teams that, I don't want to say everyone thinks that they're better than they are, but that I'm going to say that. Like, everyone thinks that they're better than they are.
Yeah, I do
like,
agree.
You always hear quarters, or this is going to be the first African team to really break through at a major tournament. And I think they made the round of 16 twice in back-to-back tournaments in 94 and 98, and they've done nothing since. And they're not getting any younger. I just look at the Bosnian team, spirit, morale. It reminds me a lot as a Croatian how excited I was as a kid growing up when they participated in their first World Cup in 1998. I'm not here to insinuate that this Bosnian side has as much quality as that Croatian golden generation, but I think having a lot of team pride and excitement for a first tournament for a country that's been through, let's be honest, they've been through a hell of a lot over the years, and this is a great moment for all their people, their fans. Like, I read a story about Zeko when their top guy, Edin Zeko. When he was a kid back home in Bosnia during the war, he would play outside and there'd be mortar shells and bombs going off around him. One day, his mother just didn't have a good feeling and said, "You know what, I don't want you to go to the park today." He didn't go to the park. Some kids he knew did, and a bomb exploded and they died. It's awful. It's just like a whole other level of commitment. So I can't imagine his feeling when he comes out and hears the anthem for the first time in his country on the world stage. It goes further than just him, too. They have some really, really great attacking talent. Miralem Pjanic in Roma, fantastic wing player. Senad Lulic at Lazio is fantastic in his own right. Vedad Ibišević from Stuttgart is always capable of scoring goals. And then, as we know, they have Asmir Begovic in goal, ex-TFC product. What do you think of the Bosnian team, Matt?
I like it. I think, you know, they're going to rely heavily on Edin Dzeko.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy has 33 goals in 60 games for his country. I mean, he's prolific. He was part of the major reason why they qualified out of the group and qualifying to get to the World Cup. And, you know, even domestically, he's been a big part of Man City winning a couple of league titles over the last three seasons. 66 goals in 153 games for his club at Man City. And that's after banging in a mere 85 goals in 142 for Wolfsburg. So the dude knows how to find the back of the net. And he's going to need to in this. He's a tall talisman, but he has great feet too. He's overall a very, very good player. Kind of underrated player as well. You know, you see him sitting on the bench at Man City quite a bit, and it's like, you know, why isn't this guy playing 90 minutes every day?
How often does he come on and make some kind of impact for them?
Almost every time, it feels like, right? It's just, the guy just makes a difference every time he steps on the park. Miralem Pjanic, as you mentioned, as someone who follows Roma very closely, I can tell you how influential that guy is. You know, he is a great player at the club level. He's just signed a new deal to stay at Roma, despite some heavy interest from some bigger countries, I guess, in Europe, you know, the Man Uniteds and the Real Madrids and stuff. He has 8 goals in 46 games for his club. Don't expect him to necessarily get forward a ton and score, but he'll be that guy who sets everything up for Dzeko up front. So, and, you know, like you said, Begovic has played really well in the Premier League since he's been there. And so, you know, I think this team's set up. You know, I think it's a toss-up, really, between Bosnia and Nigeria.
The one issue I do have with the Bosnian squad, I think they're rock solid up front. I think very, very strong. Even through the midfield, they have some class players. Begovic is good in goal. I worry about them defensively.
Yeah, I do too a little. I think that's why Begovic is really going to be on his game for this World Cup. But
I think they have enough pride and motivation. My pick, Matt, I have Bosnia going through in second. I wouldn't honestly be stunned to see them beat Nigeria like a 3-2 shootout kind of game that they just have more offensive tools. And you know Nigeria loves to play an open game too, for sometimes to their detriment, for better or worse.
Right.
I expect that high-scoring contest to settle second place, and I think Bosnia has enough to progress to the next phase.
I'm going to lean Nigeria.
What's taking Nigeria's way?
I look at their team, and they haven't released their 23-man roster, but the provisional team. And, you know, their team is solid. It's not great, but it's not bad. And I think overall, the players they have will be really, really good. You know, you got, you know, Victor Moses at Chelsea has been playing well. Peter Odemwingie. Who else we got here? Ahmed Musa. I mean, those three guys will be scoring goals. You know, you look in the middle of the midfield, John Obi Mikel of Chelsea has just been around forever, it seems now. You know, he's been a very good player throughout the duration of his career. Argenyi Nunadze of Lazio doesn't score very often. Young man, but, you know, playing well. And, you know, at the end of the day, Rob, we still have Joseph Yobo kicking around in central defense for this Nigerian team.
Unbelievable.
The guy has honestly been like around forever, it seems. And, you know, he spent 10 years at Everton, then left, and he was back on loan at Norwich for the second half of the Premier League season. And then in goal, we got Vincent Enyima of Lille in France. He's 88 caps. You know, a very underrated goalie, in my opinion. You know, he's kind of been around for a long time for this Nigerian team. So there's a lot of experience on this team. Up front, you know, they have some youthful guys. Obviously, Victor Moses isn't too old. Peter Odemwingie is kind of just, you know, late 20s, but has been around the block enough. 9 goals in 55 games for his country. So I just think overall this Nigerian side, even though they haven't taken Obafemi Martins, which did surprise me, he's been a fixture of the Nigerian team for a long time, I think overall they are just better than Bosnia, and I think they're going to pip the World Cup newcomers for a spot in the round of 16.
Again, I think it's just like many of these other groups. You don't sound wrong or ignorant either way that you go with it. And like, we're sitting here, I'm sure it wouldn't stun you to see Bosnia move on. And
not at all.
The same with me with Nigeria. I mean, Nigeria's got to like their chances when you consider the group. If they're going to do it, it feels like it should be now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, it's a toss-up. It kind of is. It's kind of, you know, as you said, it's kind of like that for quite a few countries in each group. So,
well, we can't agree on everything all the time.
Exactly. Not at all, sir. Not at all.
Quick roundup of La Liga. So, Matt, I got to say we looked pretty smart with this one.
We did. We both picked Atletico to get the draw at Barcelona that they needed.
I said a scratch and claw affair, I believe was my quote.
Absolutely. So, you know, it took a Diego Godin header in the second half to get the game-tying goal. And, you know, I have not much stock in Atletico as a fan or anything, but I was nervous for them, you know, to win the league. You know, it's the first team in 10 years not named Barcelona or Real Madrid to win the league title.
For me as a neutral, it was something nice to see.
It was really
good. Standard.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, why a lot of people were rooting for Liverpool in the Premier League. They wanted someone different to win it for once. However,
Atletico was able to close the deal at the end of the day.
Yeah, they were, and they deserve it. Yeah. I mean, there's no way around it. They've been the best team all year. However, in Italy, Juve won the league title for the second straight year. And Rob, they set a European record of 102 points to win the league. They dominated the league from start to finish. Well, Roma had a good start. Juve played a little catch-up, and then they just flew away after
that. Just blown away, yeah.
It's nice, you know, it's nice to see Roma back. Second place, to go back to the Champions League next year. They've kind of faltered the last few years, so it's good to see them back up. And the other big storyline from Italy is the fact that Milan, 45 points behind Juve when the season finished. Not even in Europe next year. Kind of like Man United's failures in the Premier League. Major teams not playing in Europe next year.
That's crazy.
I guess just a quick look at in League One in France, Rob. PSG, league winners again.
Don't think that surprises
it
anybody.
It doesn't really surprise anyone. Monaco have, you know, brought a lot of players in, and they just haven't, you know, Radim Fakal, you know, James Rodriguez, these guys, but they haven't quite made that leap yet to really contend with PSG. And
Before we wrap things up here, Matt, I'm sure you saw as well the Louis van Gaal appointment for Man United. As an English soccer fan and supporter, what are your thoughts on the hire?
I like it. Just quickly back to Monaco for 1 second. Claudio Ranieri, the manager, just got canned. So a fresh start in Monaco is coming up. Van Gaal at Man United, I like it a lot. You know, it was really cool seeing Ryan Giggs as the assistant manager for a few games. And yeah, as manager, and now he's staying as the assistant manager. You know, Van Gaal, he's going to be coaching Holland at the World Cup, and then he's going to come home from there and become the new Man United boss. You know, he won a ton of trophies with Bayern. He's coached also Ajax and Barca. So I don't think it gets much bigger than Louis Van Gaal.
I think it's a good appointment for them. They need someone to come in, not an iron fist type guy necessarily, but someone who demands that instant respect and credibility. I think Manchester United has to bring the credibility of the crest back to that squad. They've lost that seemingly with Fergie leaving and his golden generation of guys, you know, the Nevilles, Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes, Beckham before them, yep, Giggsy now, all phasing out. They need a new leadership structure, and I think they got to build it from the bottom up like they did back then.
And, you know, I mean, the pieces are in place for United. You know, they're still one of the best teams around. They just had a terrible year just from start to finish. You know, you still got Wayne Rooney, Van Persie, you know, overall, they're still a great team. I think they're going to be busy in the transfer window, though.
Yes, I agree.
Trying to, you know, fill in some holes, and Louis van Gaal, I'm sure, will be pinpointing some of his former players to try and bring into United. So
yeah, I read an article has Mandzukic fallen out of form in Bayern Munich, and he's always, Van Gaal's always been a big supporter of his, so I think depending maybe what he does at the tournament, that might be a possibility.
Yeah, so I expect some turnaround, because United now can only focus domestically. They have no European football next year, so it really is the, you know, the Premier League, the FA Cup. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to be on the rise next year. They'll be back.
It's still Manchester United, and you don't hold down Manchester United for too long. Matt, unfortunately, time goes super fast when we're in here talking footy. That's all we have for today, everyone. Thanks again for joining us. We'll be back next week to cover the final two groups of the World Cup. Matt and Rob, signing off.